Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefree, and this is episode number 209. I want to thank each of you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that share this on social media and comment and all those things. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically Sorenex for sponsoring this episode. Really appreciate those companies and all that they do and bring these shows to you for free each and every week. Really excited to get a mentor of mine on the show, you know, Bob Alejo. You know, even though we've never worked together, has been a guy that I've, you know, I remember going back to the Nashville Coaches Conference back before it was, you know, the Sports Specific Conference back before it was a Coaches Conference. And Coach Alejo's presentation was the very first one that I had listened to, and was just blown away by the presentation and him, and stayed in touch with them and followed him from afar, and going into baseball right after that was big, and just been a guy that's contributed so much to this profession in a lot of ways. So, man, Coach, I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Wow, and I'm looking for an agent right after that build-up. Yeah, I appreciate it, Ronnie. I'm looking forward to it. I'm honored, man. I was feeling left out there for a while.
Absolutely not. I had you on the list for a long time, and we've tried to make this work, but glad we did finally here. And
perfect, I believe it.
Coach, you know, you've done it all. I mean, you're former director of the NC State, the Oakland A's is where, you know, I've really got to know you and follow you. UC Santa Barbara, US Olympic volleyball, and probably UCLA is probably where you had the most success through the years. Before we hit record, we talked about Pacific Bell even, you know, with Pacific Bell, but which one of those experiences, you know, best defines you as a coach? Like, where did you really kind of grow up as a coach and that kind of story behind that?
You know, I'd have to say that probably my time with the A's is when I kind of grew up. I left UCLA after 10 solid years with, you know, what was arguably the country's best athletic program, men's and women's both. And then the time with the A's, because, you know, when we started there, everybody talks about the money ball piece, but, right, you know, we almost lost 100 games twice. I mean, we weren't very good for a long, long time. So, you know, the support that I got from Billy Bean and Sandy Alderson at the time, you know, that proved that they believed in what we were doing, but also understand, you know, what's happening there.
Right.
And,
sure.
You know, being around Tony La Russa every single day was imaginary. It was imaginary at times, really. You could never imagine you're able to do that. And so that probably was it. Now, that being said, I would say my most gratifying time, and when you talk about reward, we won 20-something national championships at UCLA. We went to we won the Western Division and wild card at the A's. But probably my most gratifying and rewarding was my 4 years at UC Santa Barbara, and I'll tell you why. Because it was a time in my life where I kind of had to take a step back. I came off doing my own thing for a little while. Mm-hmm. And I probably was with athletes I normally wouldn't have been with or accustomed to. And those athletes were going to be around somebody they probably normally wouldn't have been exposed or accustomed to. And, you know, we only won one national championship. That was a men's soccer, which is their only national championship in school history. I think water polo did something, but it wasn't a national thing quite yet.
Right.
That being said, it was really, you know, a very symbiotic relationship. They were so appreciative of things we did, you know, and I was appreciative of what they were doing. I mean, listen, we're talking about the UC system, right? The Harvard and Yale of the Ivy League of the West Coast. So I told those kids, listen, I'm going to be really nice to you because you're either going to operate on my heart or represent me in court.
That's right.
So, you know, we take this one step at a time, but they just worked hard. I mean, we didn't shatter any power clean, squat records, bench press records,
sure,
not at all. But the accomplishment that they got going back to the basics again in a two-man team, Allison Park, female coach, it was just me and her.
Right.
And that was probably my most rewarding time.
Well, that's, I'm glad you said that, because I think we talk about this on the show so much, but, and you've done it. You've done it at the highest level, A's and all that. But, I mean, what you do learn, you know, as young coaches, we're on this quest to kind of for the logo, but the, what you do learn in your career is that, you know, ultimately it doesn't matter what logo's on your chest. It's the relationships with the athletes. And that's, you know, so important. And I know you echo that.
Well, I'm going to tell you, man, nobody, and I think if they are, they need to rethink it. If you're coaching for the emblem or the sweats and the tennis shoes, you're not doing it the right way. Not for the right reason. You're not doing it the right way. That emblem, whether it's Johnson Junior High School or the Philadelphia 76ers, that right. shouldn't change how hard you work. Neither should your salary. You know, I mean, that's just one of those things that you just don't do. I mean, I'm not saying don't be excited about where you're at.
Right.
You shouldn't be coaching any harder or changing your philosophy, your ethics, your principles, your morals just because of where you're at. That should be a constant.
I agree with that 100%. Well, 30 plus years of coaching, I'm sure you've made lots of mistakes. What's the biggest?
Oh, wait a minute.
I know everybody'd be shocked to hear that, but what's one of the biggest ones you've made and kind of how you learned from it?
Well, you know, that's a good point that you make. You know, I probably did make, I could have made tons of mistakes at UCLA, but those damn athletes were so good. They probably overcame
it up, right? Yeah.
And I was on a learning curve. I'm on a learning curve at UCLA, my first big time job in 84 with a team that been to the Rose Bowl two times before I got there. Wow. With, you know, world champions, world record holders. Jackie Joyner was still in school there. And,
wow.
You know, Kevin Young, Michael Powell was a sophomore or a junior when I got there. I mean, so, man, I might have cost Michael Powell another foot on his long jump for our high jump. The biggest mistake, you know what? We only know what we know, right?
Right,
so,
sure.
You know, my back is a result of what we did, you know, back in the early 80s and 70s. I was a competitive power lifter, squatting as heavy as we could twice a week.
Right.
Deadlifting about the same. So I didn't make a mistake then, but now I look back, like most of us, and as the research gets unveiled or just even anecdotal stuff, and find out that you don't need to do that. The most I'll ever squat these days, not me personally, but is once a week. That's it. And still making athletes run faster and jump higher. So that's really the thing. If I look back, I write programs sometimes, and I wonder, I think some of us do that. You may have to chime in on this. I write, how would I feel after this squat workout? Right. How would I feel after this clean workout? And I just think, God, that's just a lot of weight on the back, you know? And sometimes I'll write it down. It looks good today. When I put it into practice in 3 weeks, I look at the weight and I tell the kid, now drop that down 20 kilos. We're not doing that.
It's right. Just,
you get that feeling in your bones, right? Literally.
No doubt.
The other thing, we used to do tons of plyometrics back in the day, but Valerie Borzov, I don't know if anybody knows about who that guy is, but Russian sprinter,
yep.
Best in the world record all the time. He was doing tons of plyometrics, which we kind of stole. Well, at some point, I mean, he was doing 300, 400, 500 responses a week.
Wow.
And you might ask Michael Yestis on that, but I'm pretty sure that was about it. But somehow, somewhere, some people found that a quarter of that volume gets you the same thing. Right. If you're asking me what's been cutting edge over the last, to me, over the last 30 years, that's the only cutting edge thing I can think of right now. That plyometrics got scaled back so far, getting the same results. But luckily, that kind of happened the same time I started, so I wasn't able to dumb out too much on that.
I think that's your line, right? Your line is, tell me what you think is new, and I'll tell you what we used to call it, right?
Yeah.
Is that you?
Yeah. God, you know, I couldn't think of anything else because, first of all, I'm up in front of 500 people speaking, and some guy goes, Coach, do you know, ever heard of the thoracic receptive popliteal, you know?
That's right.
I said, all right, I don't want to look like the only guy in here that doesn't know what the hell this guy's talking about.
That's right.
But so I said, well, you know, why don't you tell me what it is, and I'll tell you what we used to call it.
That's
and,
right.
And it really is. That hinges on one of my other pet peeves. That what other profession can you think of, Ronnie, where we change the names and titles of things whenever we want?
Oh,
I mean, what, bookkeeping? No. Statistics, medicine, car mechanics. It's all the same thing, right?
Right.
Keep changing stuff left and right. I can't keep up with the damn name changes.
You and me both. Well, Coach, you—I mean, you were at the A's with, you know, during the Moneyball, you know, and Billy Beane and the heyday and all the whole deal. Yeah, you know, I want to come at it from a little bit different perspective. I mean, obviously okay. from the winning and all that, but what did being a part of that, you know, teach you specifically about strength and conditioning? What were you able to take from that kind of analytical kind of approach and apply it to your craft?
Well, I mean, I think it's kind of the formula I came up with and actually wrote it down on paper, that common sense, science, and intuition equals the best results. I don't think you can lean on one thing. All those things become a likelihood, Ron. You know, it's like I just saw a tweet the other day about the FMS does not predict injury. Well, number one, Grant Cook and them cats never said it did.
Right.
It was other guys kind of doing their interpretation of data and all that. What I say is it's another assessment that allows me to understand the likelihood. You know, when you put these theories into place, if then, if then, if then. I mean, if the guy moves poorly, then there's a chance that might lead to something if we squat, if we run, if we jump, if we get tackled, if you get in a bad position when you're wrestling, all these things, you know. So it's not maybe a straight one-to-one correlation or causation for that fact. But I think that it makes sense to understand that you have to use the data. And I think with Billy and those guys, they came at a time that, now, I wouldn't say that was cutting edge, but it was revolutionary.
Yeah, sure.
And now you see Theo Epstein doing it and many others. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, 25 and 30 somethings in Major League Baseball right now for nothing more than the fact that they really are strong analytics guys, which is why Paul DePodesta, who's now with the Browns,
right,
came from us during the Moneyball.
Yep.
Went to the Dodgers as a GM, then went to the Mets with Sandy Alderson, or his first boss, and now he's with the Browns. Not because he knows football as much, but because he knows how to look at the data and understand sports. So I think it was a combination of all those things. There's got to be some intuition in there. And think about it now. Intuition is not some cosmic thing. Intuition is experience-based stuff where you get feelings. But those feelings just don't come out of the air. They come from this huge experience that you have. But then, you know, those things become anecdotal. And I think largely if you said, okay, let's see where the science is, there's probably a good amount of science that goes with it too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Without even knowing that.
Well, that's, you know, there's a big difference between being experienced or being credentialed and being qualified, you know, and that's something that young coaches don't often get is, right, I've got my CSCS, I've got my degree, I've read whatever book you want to throw out there, and all of a sudden now I know what I'm doing. And that's why, you know, the internship process and the GA process and all that is so important, because you get to see how somebody that is experienced has dealt with those types of situations, and now you have an intuition on how you should be able to approach some of these crazy things, because it's on the job training. I mean, it's very apprenticeship type of profession.
Yeah, and then I also think that as you get older, like in my case, I like to refer to like writing programs. Like when I look at the 52-week schedule and start periodizing what I'm doing, I like to think of more like art. I mean, because you've done it so many times and all those things are wrapped in. If you're an artist, you're not saying, you know, coloring in the numbers, right? Your intuition, how that should look and how that should flow. An architect, an artist, a singer, and a jazz artist. I mean, I don't know that I'd put us in that realm, but by definition, I think, you know, writing programs, you get older, they should be very artistic, I think.
I'm 100% believe that. And, you know, I've been working on an article for probably 15 years of, you know, how do you evaluate a strength coach? And what I've kind of come to is the fact that it is an art. You can't, it's interpretation, you know, and you can throw variables in. You can throw variables in, like injury rates and, you know, all those types of things, but, you know, performance indicators and KPIs and all that. But at the end of the day, it's art, you know, it's such a hard thing to evaluate.
I like that interpretation piece, you know, especially when what you and I talked a little bit off air was only an artist understands an artist.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Supervisors, people who hire us. Most of those guys just aren't artists, you know, and of any form. I mean, that's why you get, you know, heavy metal guys who love Frank Sinatra. May not have a CD of his, but can appreciate his art.
That's awesome. I'm writing that one down. That's another one of your quotes I'm stealing, Coach.
Oh, it's good for me.
The keys to success. You know, you've had success everywhere you've been. I mean, at every level. I mean, the Olympic team, UCLA, the A's, NC State. For a young strength coach that's listening, what's that magic nugget that he's going to take away about what he needs to do to be Bob Vallejo in 30 years?
Well, you gotta lose your hair. Hair's a big part. You got to moisturize and tan and keep up with yourself.
There you go.
I would say you have to be persistent. You know, I mean, you have to be forceful, but you got to be smooth. And I can't say I've combined most of those things together. I like to say that I have like a folksy charm, and people just fall on the floor laughing when I say that because I'm actually got it. It's a tongue-in-cheek quote about my own personality. But at the same time, you know, you got to go with what you believe in. I mean, you know, look, you know, I'm a ground-based guy. I wouldn't say I'm Olympic lifting-based, but I use that a lot. Sure. But I do whatever I got to do. That's usually my go-to. That, to me, has been proven to be the most effective free weight training. But at the same time, I'm not afraid to use bands or body weight or whatever else it is. In the end, our job, Ron, is to make them run faster and jump higher. I think Brian Mann just had put something on Simply Faster about squatting and what we do. Should we squat all year long? It shouldn't be that I'm doing the squat because that's best, because what you're doing is, well, that makes me good. Well, but that doesn't help us win games. What if it makes them run faster to not squat? Why wouldn't you not squat?
Right.
Yeah. Like for me, I mean, kind of going off on a tangent here. For me, halfway through a season, I stop squatting because we heavy pull and we do heavy one-legged stuff. I'm talking about ones and twos in season, jacket, heavy as you can. That whole idea of maintenance is a farce. First of all, you're not going to maintain strength during the season. You want to try to kill that slope a little bit so it's not here, but it's here a little bit. You got to stay with what you know. I can't go into a place and say, you know, this job is yours, but you have to be a CrossFit coach. Well, then that job's not mine. I don't believe in it as much as I believe in my stuff.
Agreed.
So that's what you got to do. I think at some point, get away from saying, I use McKeefrey's method or I use Ken's method. At some point, it's got to be your method.
Right.
It doesn't mean that you haven't drawn from Ron and Joe, but it does mean that, you know, I stopped my staff from coming in and saying, oh, I use Prilipin or I use, and I say, don't bring those names up again in here. I've drawn from so many people out there. It's too large to name, but my program is mine. This is what I do.
Right.
Stay with that. And as long as you keep doing that, I don't think you'll be frustrated, but I think you'll be happy because then your job, the results you get are going to be pure. They're going to be exactly what you did to get what you just had instead of saying, well, you know, the coach didn't want me to do power clean, so what we did was trap bar deadlifts anyway. And then the result really isn't yours. It's not really his either.
Right.
And so at some point, you got to come up with your own method and feel good about what you do.
100% agree. And I think you got to build your toolbox, right? You got to keep pulling things in. And one of the things that I've always respected about you is just, I mean, it doesn't matter how many years in, you've got this quest for knowledge that you're always learning. I mean, you just referenced Brian Mann's article that just, you know, came out not the other day. You talked about being on Twitter and, you know, and Brett's book, I think you mentioned earlier, and, you know, it's
the Twitter less than a year. I'm a new Twitty.
But, you know, that's just it. I mean, how old are you now, coach?
I'll be 60 coming up.
60 years old and Twitter and Instagram, you know, social media. That's, you know, there's a lot of 60-year-olds that are out there saying, you know, it's the freaking Antichrist, right? The social media.
And
you're constantly learning, you know, and constantly, you know, where's that come from? Why, you know, how's that been? How have you made that? Not so much the quest for knowledge is, I think people understand, but how have you been able to reinvent yourself and get outside of your comfort zone when you had so much success using the things you've done?
Now that you just said that, I think I might come up with another quote for you. I'm not out of my comfort zone when I do that. My comfort zone is making guys better, make them run faster, jump higher. So, but really the underlying theme to this whole thing is I never want to be wrong.
Right.
And if I don't ask anybody anything, I'm going to be wrong sometimes. And that, I just hate that. And listen, if there's any time in the history of the world where you can find out the answer to things with one click, I mean, it's ridiculous. That's why I get confused and irritated sometimes when you read like a blog or something about, well, you know, I just read McKeefrey's article, and I think what he was saying is, and I tell my staff, if you look at the end of any research, there's an email there.
Right.
Nobody likes to talk about their stuff more than guys who publish.
That's exactly right.
That's why they're speaking. That's why I'm calling you. You're calling me because you and I, we think what our word is helpful and we want to get it out.
Right.
So that's really the only thing, the only reason why is I want to be right and I want to do best by my kids. And listen, all this research and getting help, it'll confirm or deny what you already know. And both those things are good.
Right. Well, I couldn't agree more. You've been in this profession a long time. You've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. You know, give me what's what in 30 years plus years of coaching about in strength and conditioning. What's the good and what is it that you want to see changed before, you know, you and I hang up our whistle?
Well, I like the fact that the salaries are starting to increase a little bit. Still a big disparity from the bottom and the top.
Yeah.
I'd like to see that smooth out a little bit. I'd like to see the bottom get raised up a little more, and subsequently the top will get a little affected by that. It's kind of like what's happened in baseball with salaries a little bit. That's important. I'd like to see us being supervised and evaluated in a very comprehensive way, and I really feel like the only way to have that done is to have a director of strength and conditioning, somebody with a good strength and conditioning background, become an associate AD, an athletic director. You know, if you look at a lot of other places, you know, you're being supervised by somebody like, you know, basketball coaches are supervising basketball players, football right. coaches are supervising football players. And even though they may have lifted, they just, you know, there's no way they can know what we know, Ron. And right. so I think the European model, as it sits in most places, is the model. You have your director of, and hell, there's 18 million times. Director of athletic performance is what I like.
Right.
And the reason I like athletic is because we don't have any effect on sports outcomes.
Yeah.
If we're director of sports performance, then how come your running back's only getting 2 yards a carry?
Right.
I say, no, I'm the director of athletic performance. He squats, he's injuries free, he's balanced. That's not my problem. I'm not the offensive coordinator. I don't substitute. Try to get yourself out of that. But I think when you get somebody in a position that's up there that can handle that whole sports performance group, because as you know, performance isn't just one thing. It's sports psych. You got athletic training. You got physical therapy. There's lots of thing in there. I mean, hell, he could be perfectly healthy, squat, clean, jerk, bench, real, real good. He leaves home after having a fight with the wife or the husband. She leaves, or you know, your significant other,
right.
or you're up with your son all night because he's got chicken pox.
Sure.
And now we wonder why he gets hurt. Well, he didn't get any sleep. So all of a sudden, this thing becomes much more than a younger coach like myself would have thought of. Like, oh, I wonder if the hamstring program was right. He pulled his hamstring. Well, we all know that's, you know, that's crazy. So that's the part I think we need to get a strength coach above, because we're so much more involved with the whole performance model than anybody else in that model. We need to get us up there. And guys, go for it, man. You got to go for it.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've talked often about the three things that I think that we need to do as a profession, and we were talking off camera about, you know, what, you know, back in the day, you know, when we say back in the day, and you know before internet, before all these things, but you know, but the reality is for you know, the profession was born out of a time when they thought it was literally bad to lift weights for sports performance, and now we've got it to where people are making $500,000 a year coaching it. We've done well there, but we haven't really advanced the profession any outside of or grow the profession any outside of maybe tactical strength and conditioning. And I think the three things to do that, you hit on one of them, was, you know, we need to get an athletic director, associate athletic director, a high performance manager, whatever you want to call it. You know, that needs to be a place where our aging strength coaches go, our coaches with experience that know how to you know, manage sports performance or athletic performance. I like that.
Yep.
I think the second thing is we need to get a strength coach in every high school. You know, and that's going to grow jobs both for young strength coaches and give an opportunity, but it's also for coaches that don't want to play the rat race anymore and want to stay in one community. And I think we need to create a degree in strength and conditioning. And now we got our best coaches teaching, and that's when the best research comes about. And that's when we grow our credibility within the academic profession, you know, and our community.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. That's well said. Well said.
That's, I mean, I think anybody listening, that's, you know, that's what I know Bob's trying to do. That's what I'm trying to do. And it needs to be a collective effort completely. But What do you see, you know, when you walk away from this profession, what do you want people to say about you?
Wow. I think that I've helped others learn their craft. That's about it. You know, I mean, when you talk about 35 years, Ron, up to this point, and one of the things I'm most proud of right to this day is that our internship at North Carolina State in our strength program has put 20 full-time coaches out in the workforce in 5 years.
That's awesome.
And I challenge anybody to tell me they've done a better job than that. Mm-hmm. And I hope they have. I'd be my hat's off to them. But putting 20, you know, creating jobs. I mean, can you do something better for a person that created a job in a profession that's been good to you? I mean, I'm really proud of that. And that's, you know, that hats off to Sam Craven, who directs the internship, Nate Brookerson, the director of Olympic sports, Brandon Sanders and Gabe Button. I mean, they've all done a terrific job, and you know, it's a village, and yeah. not any one of us. So, I mean, I think all those guys should be proud of the fact that those interns leave with a little bit of them on their way out the door. And so, I mean, the fact that I've been able to do that help with that is pretty exciting. I mean, like in the minor leagues, you know, when you're in the big leagues, you're gone, you have a minor league director and you have a strength coach every affiliate, but I was never around them. Now my philosophy went down through the minor leagues, but you're not there every day watching them coach, you know? And so that's, I think if I'm called a great mentor, man, I'd have a nice little smile and be happy to sit down and sit in the rocking chair and call it a day.
Yeah, that's I'm with you. the quote goes, you know, a coach touches more people in one day than most people touch in their entire life. And coaching coaches, I don't know if there's any higher calling than that. And that's I've tried to do that and replicate, you know, and mentors like you that have done it for a long, long time. And I couldn't agree more with that. Well, Coach, we end the show with some resources. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
Oh, the best piece of coach's advice. I've been contributed to so many times. I don't know that I can really come up with one thing. Probably what's going to happen, I'm going to hang up.
I'm going to call
you back and say, will you put this on there?
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
Honestly, because it's hard. You just threw my 35-year career back at me. I will say that lately I've been kind of going off path a little bit with my staff. We Skype in two or three guys a month, one to two people a month from every other walk of life, you know, because, you know, your young folks are always on social media and they're reading books left and right. I try to get them off of that and get them into something that's kind of on the side of it. So I'll give you an example. Billy Gibson, the drummer of Huey Lewis in the News, is a good friend of mine. He was in the front row, season ticket holder of the A, so I saw him at least 81 times a year.
Right.
But we became really good friends, like some of the band, and I Skyped him in for this reason.
Awesome.
One, he's on a team. Two, you know, how do you make decisions when not everybody agrees with the same thing? How do you keep a guy from being big and wanting to go solo, which any of those guys could have done? Like, you know, everybody, sometimes you find a guy on staff who's tweeting more than he probably should about what he's done or she's done. What makes your work ethic the way it is? And as I'm Skyping Billy Gibson, he's got a whole studio in his house. I said, you know, do you practice? He said, I didn't when I was younger. It was a mistake I made. I've been practicing every day. I think he said every day now for the last 20 something years.
Wow.
So I'm like, wow. I mean, this guy's made millions, right? If anybody has seen Back to the Future, I mean, if they just did that alone, that track.
That's right.
So I've been kind of doing that a little bit. And I think I'm drawn from that a lot more now than I have in the past, which is why the book that I recommend is this one right here. Best Place to Work.
It's awesome.
So it's about, you know, your environment and what you do, because, you know, no matter how much science you know and all that, if you're not happy where you're at and it's not a productive environment, it's not helpful.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, we try to read two or three books a year as a staff and comment on them in our staff meetings. But right now, I'm just thinking, I can't think of one quote, but I think it's just.
Well, it's a collection of all those things, right?
Oh, just tons of stuff. Yeah.
Well, man, like I said at the beginning, I mean, you've been a mentor to me and so many, you know, through the years, and you know, just an inspiration in the fact that, you know, you've I think what you've done in your career that's made you so great is the fact that you have pulled from all these other disciplines. And that's something that I think oftentimes I get looked at by saying that that's something that I do, but it was inspired by guys like you, and really appreciate you coming on the show, man.
Well, I'm flattered. That's such a nice thing to say. I mean, I guess if number one would be being mentored, number two would be hearing that kind of thing from coaches like yourself. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.